back to Off the Shelf here on Breadbox Media. I'm your host, Pete Socks, a Catholic book blogger, and today with us we have Father Dwight Longenecker, who was raised as an evangelical and graduated from Bob Jones University. While there, he became an Anglican, and after graduation, went to Oxford to train as an Anglican priest. After serving for 10 years as an Anglican priest, he realized that he and the Anglican faith, as he calls it, were on divergent paths. So in 1995, he converted to the Catholic faith with his wife and family. Eventually, he returned to the United States to be ordained as a Catholic priest under the special provision from Rome for married former Anglican clergy. Father Longenecker has written over 20 books on Catholic spirituality, apologetics, and prayer. He's authored hundreds of articles, which have been published in various newspapers, magazines, websites, and journals in the USA and the UK. His popular blog is called Standing on My Head. And amongst other things, we will be talking today about his latest book from Regionary History called Mystery of the Magi, The Quest to Identify the Three Wise Men. Welcome to the show, Father Dwight.
Thank you very much. Thanks for the invitation.
You're quite welcome. So, Father, this is the first time I've had a chance to speak with you on the show, so I think a good way to lead off is to hear a little bit about your conversion story, how you came to the Catholic faith and the whole transition from Anglican priest to a Catholic priest.
Well, that took about a journey of over 25 years, I think, looking back on it. But, you know, there were certainly some milestones along the way. And one of them was when I was a priest in the Church of England, the Anglicans were debating the question of women's ordination. And that made me look again at the question of authority in the church. How do you make decisions when good people, good, sincere people, disagree about a question? And this brought me back to the Catholic Church, which, of course, with the Pope, claims to have a referee in the game, somebody who's watching the whole thing and can make the final call. And I think that was the main thing which helped me to come into full communion with the Catholic faith.
Awesome. So looking at your book, Mystery of the Magi, what prompted you to write this book on this topic?
Well, you know, I have a great respect for the scriptures, and this comes from, of course, my evangelical background. And I discovered that most biblical scholars regard the story of the three wise men, the Magi, to be a pious fiction. They don't think it really happened. And also, I was aware that in popular culture, I think the Christmas stories, more than any other gospel stories, tend to be sort of put in the same big grab bag with all the other magical stories of Christmas. And it's easy to see how that's done, because you've got Santa and flying reindeer, you've got talking snowmen, you've got naughty elves and the North Pole, and all these magical stories associated with Christmas, the ghost of Christmas past. And then you've got shepherds and angels who are singing, and wise men from the mystical East who follow a magical star. And all these stories together, I think, in the popular imagination, are bundled up with fairy dust and twinkle lights and the charm of Christmas. And we forget that actually the stories about the birth of Jesus are historical.
Definitely. So was bringing a sense of clarity to this topic part of your reason for wanting to write the book?
Well, it was. Also, it must be said that this particular story of the three wise men is it's encrusted over with many, many layers of tradition and legend and myth that developed really over the first the first 1,500, 2,000 years of the church has been developing ever since the time of our Lord. And so it was my job, first of all, to peel back all those traditions and those legends, which we've sort of accepted as part of the story, but which really don't have anything to do with Matthew's gospel.
Yes. And one of the things that kind of leads me to, and I'd like to point out, is that this book is not an overly religious book, so to speak. It's more of a historical exploration, is it not?
And yeah, yes, exactly. In fact, that makes it a good book to give people who are perhaps lapsed from the faith or who think that Christianity is a fairy tale, because it's not preachy, it's not religious, it's not a spiritual book at all, except that it just simply goes into the history of the time period and shows that the story of the Magi is, in Matthew's gospel anyway, essentially very historical and fits with the history of the time as we know it.
Right. Now, as I read through the book, Mystery of the Magi, I almost felt like I was inside a journal of Indiana Jones. I mean, actually, no kidding, Father DeWitt. I envisioned you with a worn fedora sitting behind your laptop writing this book. Is that how you felt while writing this, sort of on a quest, a treasure hunt to find the truth?
You know, it was actually. I did the research, and the more I did, the more I discovered. And I did feel like one of those Indiana Jones movies a little bit, because I began really with a few clues and followed those clues step by step. And the pieces of the puzzle fell into place in an astonishing way when I kept discovering, making new discoveries and saying, whoa, that fits, and whoa, that fits. And it really was exciting. And so I tried to capture that sense of discovery and step-by-step exploration as I wrote the book, so that as you read it, people have said it really reads as a pretty exciting sort of detective story.
It really does. You point out in the book that the story of the Magi, and you mentioned it earlier in our conversation, it's only mentioned in this small snippet in the Gospel book of Matthew. He doesn't even mention their names. So I guess what I was kind of wondering was, where did you get all your information to compile this book? Because what you've, in essence, have done is compiled a very complete story of the Magi that we did not necessarily have in one volume up to this point.
Yeah, yes, the analogy of putting together a jigsaw puzzle is a good one, because when you're putting together the jigsaw puzzle, you have an overall picture that you're aiming for, but also you find pieces which don't seem to fit, and then when you move them about a bit, you say, oh, well, it does actually fit. It goes together like this. And so it was when I began to explore the history of Matthew's gospel, where it was originated, how it was written, and also the geography, the politics, the economics, the culture of the time period and the region was all part of that that discovery process.
Interesting. So how long did the process take? It seems like this is probably a pretty time-consuming book, because you definitely had to do some digging to get to where you ended up.
I think it took probably about a year of pretty solid research in my free time. But then it took up some time writing it, putting it together, working with the publishers and so forth. So overall, about a two-year process, I guess.
Wow. And did anything surprise you as you conducted this research?
Yeah, lots of things. But one of the really neat details was to discover more about Herod the Great and to read his biography. And the politics of the time came together perfectly to support my thesis that the wise men are diplomats from the kingdom of Nabatea. That's the kingdom just to the east of Judea. Herod the Great and the Nabateans had connections down through history. Herod's mother was a Nabatean princess. He was brought up in the Nabatean court. So the theory is that the wise men actually were very familiar with Herod already, and they were from the neighboring kingdom. He was also familiar with them and their king, and they came on a diplomatic mission to the court of Herod, having discerned that there was a newborn heir to the throne of the king of the Jews.
Interesting. So one thing that struck me was, again, you mentioned this earlier, was the number of researchers who really totally write off the entire story of the Magi, as you had said, as being a false fairy tale, so to speak, I guess is the best way to put it. And what's the strongest piece of evidence you think that you found during this to refute those claims?
Well, just to go back to that point, when I was researching, I kept on thinking, somebody else has already written this book. Somebody has done all this already. Surely I'm not the first person in 2,000 years of church history to have discovered who the wise men are. But I didn't actually find anybody that had written the book. And the reason is very interesting. One is, as you've mentioned, New Testament academics wrote the story off as a pious fiction. So, you know, why would anybody go on a historical search for a search for the historical Peter Pan? You know, mm. they never looked at it. The second thing is the believers just continued to assume that the traditions that they'd heard over the years were the truth, and they didn't do the research either. And then also, when we looked at why those traditions developed, they developed in a very good way, so that a very believable way, so that those who did believe in the historical magi simply said, oh, they were from Persia. They were wise men from Persia. And I say in the book that, like most history, most mystery books, the first answer is usually seems the right answer, but it's usually not the right answer. And so it is with the idea that the wise men came from Persia. The reason it was decided that they came from Persia were some very good reasons, but as I say in my book, they were not the correct reasons.
Right. So we're going to get into the weeds a little bit more with your book. When we come back, we're going to take a short break. You're listening to Off the Shelf here on Breadbox Media, and we'll be right back. Media. I'm your host, Pete Sox, a Catholic book blogger. Today with us is Father Dwight Longenecker, the author of the newly released Mystery of the Magi, The Quest to Identify the Three Wise Men. Great book, great historical book, and something I will point out again that we pointed out last segment is it's not necessarily an overly religious book. It's a very historical based book, so it could be for anyone on your Christmas list that is interested in history. So, Father, let's get a little deeper into this here, and let's open this package a little bit. And there's some controversy that some people may not be aware of with the Magi, isn't there? Basically, we did talk about it a bit. You know, there's a lot of people that refute the story. They think it's all glitz and glamour. But, you know, through your research and through reading this book, it's far from being controversial. There's a lot of data proving that there were such gentlemen that traveled to see the birth of the Christ child, isn't there?
Yes. The background of the Magi themselves is quite interesting. They originated in probably about the 7th or 8th century BC, or even earlier, what is present-day Iran and Iraq. And they were a caste of the historians think probably like originally witch doctors, shamans, soothsayers, fortune tellers, and so forth. And they eventually developed into wise men, the intelligentsia of the Persian Empire. They adopted the Zoroastrian religion. They became astronomers, astrologers, mathematicians, philosophers, really were wise men, and they were important in the Persian Empire, but for various reasons that I outline in the book, they began to be dispersed around the ancient Middle East.
You link the writings in Isaiah to come up with this theory on where you developed from where the Magi came from. And that's, to me, the linking between the Old and New Testament is always fascinating. How did you stumble upon that linkage? Because as you alluded to earlier, this is a book you thought should have been written, and it wasn't. So, you know, what enabled you to find that linkage?
Again, the prophecies in Isaiah chapter 60 have always been used in the liturgy of the church for the Feast of Epiphany, because he talks about the Messiah, and he says that the kings of Sheba and Ephah and Midian will come on their dromedaries bringing their gifts of gold and frankincense. And so the fathers of the church read this and saw it as a prophecy of the Magi. And this led me to begin asking where the Magi came from, which led me, first of all, to the area of Arabia, which is where Midian, Sheba, and Ephah were located. But what I found about the prophecies of Isaiah were even more interesting, because the second part of Isaiah, scholars believe, was written after the Jews went into exile and Nebuchadnezzar destroyed the temple in 586 BC. And we know that a lot of the Jews not only went to Babylon, but they escaped into northwest Arabia and the other the Jewish settlements in Arabia. And when you read the second part of Isaiah, the context and the language sounds very much like Arabia. He talks about the deserts blooming and the deserts being watered and the long coastlands and the mountains. This sounds much more like the Arabian geography than it does the lush, fertile sort of river valleys of Mesopotamia, where Babylon was located. And so therefore, as I looked further into it, I discovered there are some scholars who actually believe that the second part of Isaiah's prophecies were written in Arabia. And these prophecies were therefore written about their own people, saying the princes of Sheba and Ephah and Midian will make this journey to find the Messiah. So all of this came together, again, to look at the history in a very interesting way.
Yes, and again, a jigsaw puzzle that you needed to put together. So when you were conducting this, the research for this book, obviously, there's a lot of myths surrounding the Magi. What were some of the biggest ones that you found while you were conducting your research?
Well, what happened in the 3rd, 4th, and 5th centuries were the church in Syria, Asia Minor, and Persia was very influenced by Gnosticism and by Manichaeism, which was a Gnostic sect. The Gnostics were like the New Age believers of today, very interested in esoteric wisdom, in magic, in superstitious things. And they picked up this story of the mystical wizards from the East, and they sort of ran with it. And there are various infancy narratives from that time period, which are very, very fanciful. The revelation of the Magi is one. Another one is the Syriac infancy narrative. And these various legends elaborated the magical aspects of the Magi story so that you soon had the star was a burning baby that moved across the night sky. It was speaking to them and doing miracles for them as they traveled and all sorts of things. And that's when their names began to develop as well, I believe in the 5th, 4th, and 5th century. And we call them Balthazar, Melchior, and Caspar, but at that time period, there were 6 or 7 different versions of their names from the different cultures and the different apocryphal writings that were around. So some of these legends, therefore, found their way into the Western tradition through the Byzantine Empire and so forth. And then through the Middle Ages, they continued to develop, giving us the basic version that we have today, which we all appreciate, but I had to point out is not very connected with Matthew's gospel.
Mm-hmm. So the story of them following the star, you alluded to that a little bit there. How did that develop?
Again, this developed as it grew out of the Gnostic legends, all of which spoke about a magical star which appeared, and sometimes the star spoke to them, sometimes it was an angel, sometimes it was a burning baby in the sky, and all these legends then began to accumulate so that we, in the Middle Ages, remember, people were not literate back then. They didn't do this kind of research. They just took the traditions for granted. And they followed. They came up with the idea and continued the idea that the star was a magical, miraculous star that moved across the night sky. And don't get me wrong, I'm not disputing the possibility of the miraculous, but the church always tells us to look for the natural explanation first. And the natural explanation and the more reasonable explanation is that the wise men were astrologers. They saw certain signs in the night sky, which I explain in my book. And they concluded that there was a newborn king of the Jews, and they should go and look for him.
Okay. Now, we've alluded to this a little bit throughout the time we've had together so far today, and that was that biblical researchers dismiss the account. And why do you think they do that?
Well, because what they're really dismissing, is the medieval legends that have developed. by the time biblical scholarship began to be to develop, the basic received understanding of the Magi story was just this one of mystical wizards from the east who followed a miraculous star through the night sky to find and worship the newborn king of the Jews, this new Messiah figure. And that was the received understanding and midrash or interpretation of Matthew's gospel. And nobody bothered to say, well, look, this doesn't actually match what Matthew says. They simply assumed it. So the modern scholars took that very miraculous story. You know, it sounds a bit like Pinocchio, when you wish upon a star or something, and they said, look, this is a fairy tale. And they never really took it any further.
All right, we're going to take another quick break. You've been listening to Off the Shelf here on Breadbox Media, and we will be right back. Let bad coffee leave you bitter. Experience the pure taste of artisan small batch coffee with Grim Bean Coffee Company. Grim Bean's whole bean and ground coffee is sourced from 90 farms across the coffee belt from organic, fair trade, and direct trade farmers. With over 20 coffee selections, Grim Bean is sure to match your taste. Single purchase and subscription services delivered to you ensure that you will never be without your favorite coffee again. Visit GrimBeanCoffee.com today for 10% off your order with the code BREADBOX at checkout. Experience the best with Grim Bean Coffee Company. Here on Breadbox Media, I'm your host Pete Sox, a Catholic book blogger, and today with us we have Father Dwight Longenecker. We've been discussing his new book from Region Ary History called Mystery of the Magi, The Quest to Identify the Three Wise Men. Quite a complicated tale. It's not quite as simple as many people think it is. That's why you really should get this book and check it out. So, Father, what do you think is the most telling piece of historical evidence you found to refute the claims that the Magi didn't exist?
Well, you know, like a lot of detective stories, it's a matter of putting together a lot of little pieces of evidence. One of the main things was to find out that the Persian Magi, which really did exist, by the time of Jesus' birth, were a spent force. They were not an influential group of people by the time of Jesus' birth, and the political situation was such that they would not have made this journey. The other was to discover the fascinating roots of the Nabataean civilization. The Nabataeans are pretty much unknown because they left no historical written history of their civilization. But when I dug into it, I found that there's three strands of their culture. One is the ancient Abrahamic tribes of the Arabian Peninsula, who were nomads, who still are to this day, and also the influx of refugee Jews after the destruction of Jerusalem, who brought their culture and their learning and mixed with the Abrahamic tribes, and who were kind of their cousins. They all traced their same heritage back to Abraham. And then the third influence was the Babylonians, who dominated that same territory in the 6th century B.C., and these three elements together made up the Nabataean civilization, which was very, very interesting. They were a trading nation controlling the trade routes across the Arabian Peninsula, but also had this cultural link with the Jews, and therefore would have had a real vital interest in the Messiah and from a spiritual point of view, but also a political and economic interest because the Judeans were their neighbors.
Which is what, this is another thing about your book that I find very interesting, and again, I can't recommend it enough, is it's not just about the story. You're diving into the culture, you're diving into the events surrounding it. It's a really a complete study on that time period surrounding the birth of the Savior of the world.
Yes, anybody who reads it is going to connect not only with the three wise men and Jesus and Mary and Joseph, but also with the fascinating character of Herod the Great, who is a kind of connector, therefore, to people, other famous characters like Pompey and Caesar Augustus and Antony and Cleopatra. All these are whirling about in the decades before our Lord's birth, and they all have a part to play in the drama. And this is another thing which was so interesting, to see how Jesus' birth fits in as a kind of keystone into all these other events and characters which are so highly dramatic, swirling about in the dawn of the Roman Empire.
So you've written a book, and I guess the question I have that might be on everybody's mind is, why is it so important to understand the story of the Magi?
Well, I think going back to one of your first questions, the scholars dismiss it, most of them dismiss it as a fairy tale. And in the popular imagination, a lot of the Gospels are written off as fairy tales. You know, I get this feeling that the man in the street, if you ask them whether the Gospel stories are factual, will probably conclude that, you know, they're a mixture of miracles and fables and parables and pretty stories about a person who might have lived long ago, who went around being nice to children and healing people. But, you know, it's all a bit magical and fairy tale. And it's sort of in the same bucket with our fairy tales we learned as children and Aesop's fables and all that sort of thing. And it's therefore important to have a history book like this, which is accessible for people. And everybody knows about the wise men, so it's very accessible, and they can pick it up and say, hey, hang on, this is really interesting. This was real. This happened. And if this happened, then let's have another look at the rest of the gospel stories and this character, Jesus of Nazareth, who changed the world.
Definitely. So I want to ask you a couple unrelated questions to the book. The first we discussed a little bit during the break, but I think it's an interesting story to tell. Your blog, you write at the blog that you call Standing on My Head. Could you tell people where you developed that name for your blog from?
Yes, that's from one of my favorite writers, G.K. Chesterton. And in his little biography of St. Francis, he talks about Francis's eccentricity and his unusualness and what a character he is. And he says that Francis stood on his head and he stood the world on its head. And he has this line where he says, that's a good thing because sometimes a scene is most clearly seen when it is seen upside down. And so I wanted to write a blog which perhaps stood things on their head and looked at the world and current events and the faith from a fresh perspective.
And one thing I talked about in your introductory bio is you've written 20-some books now. Is there any other of your works you'd like to point out to people while we have their attention?
Repeat that question, please.
You have written 20-some books up to this point, if I'm correct in that number. And is there any of them that you would like to draw people's attention to that are listening today?
Yeah, well, my two favorites are called The Quest for the Creed and The Romance of Religion. And in these two books, I do just what I was talking about. I stand things on their head and look at the faith from a new perspective. And I think a fairly creative approach, and an approach which is witty and touches on literature and films and movies and is not particularly, you know, religious or pious, but still takes the faith, the claims of faith seriously. These books and the rest of my writings, of course, I should say, can all be found at dwightlongenecker.com, and visitors are always very welcome to my blog and website.
Awesome. So in closing, any closing thoughts on this book or any at all you'd like to share with us?
Yeah, I only hope that this book isn't just a sort of Christmas flash in the pan and, you know, people get it for Christmas and then put it on the shelf, because it really, its interest and its importance extends beyond that. I would love it to become a kind of point of study and reference for anybody who's beginning to study the New Testament, because although it talks about the Magi, it also, as you said, brings in an awful lot more history from the time period, and makes the very important point that history is important.
And indeed it is. So, Father Dwight, thank you so much for spending time with us today.
Thanks for the invitation.
You're quite welcome. And you've been listening to Off the Shelf here on Breadbox Media. I'm your host, Pete Sox, a Catholic book blogger. And until next time, God bless.